because my laptop is in the bedroom where it's not in anybody's way.
Okay.
We can record.
Hell yeah.
We call that the laptop in the fighting game, the FGC.
No, that's what they call it around my neck of the woods too.
The laptop.
Welcome to the laptop.
Razer's new limited edition black laptop.
Black
the most
laptop
loyal computer you could ever imagine. Fetches more packets than any lab.
Fetches more packets, yeah.
It's so powerful.
All right, so how are the levels?
Is that a computer dog that you're talking about? Just to get set the record straight, it's a computer dog, right?
Yeah, black laptop.
Oh, it doesn't last that long, though.
Are we good?
Well, it lasts longer than most traditional.
Well, the problem with the laptop is that it gets older. Like it both has dog years and computer years, and you know how computers like the parts in them are only kind of so good for a couple of years, for like 3 years, and it's getting times 7 from the dog years, and then times like 20 from the computer years.
Are you saying I'm like 1.5 computer years?
Yeah, I mean like you. Computer years would obviously be way more than like dog years. Like 1 year of a computer's life is probably like 20 years of humans' lives. But the difference with computers is that you can take out their organs and then put in new ones.
Just like with humans.
Yeah, just like humans.
And that's the deal with games this week. Are we ready to start talking about video games?
I think we're ready. I think we're going. I think this is it right here. This is the sickest podcast in the world. And
the sickest podcast.
The sickest podcast in the world. And by sick, I mean that you can hear what I mean.
Yeah, well, this is WTDG Podcast for the week of August 8th. We're in it now. This is the middle of summer madness.
Yeah, tomorrow's the fake release date for No Man's Sky coming out on the 12th.
Well, tomorrow is the PlayStation 4 release date.
That's not
fair. If I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Even though it's 12.
We know a lot, but you know what the wildest thing about this podcast is?
What is the wildest thing?
The wildest thing about this podcast is that when we recorded last week, I was an unemployed man. And immediately following the podcast, I got a job, and I've already worked a full week at that job because I started the next day.
Yeah. Congrats.
And congratulations. Thank you, and I am currently running on 2 hours of sleep because I have no idea how to deal with stress.
Huh.
Wow. I probably feel similar to you after about 14 hours of sleep.
Yeah, Sean is equally sick, apparently.
Right on. Right. So everybody's a little under the weather today.
Yeah, I didn't even work on Sunday.
For various reasons.
When I came in on... I completely lost my voice on Saturday. I work Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I have to mention this every podcast for some reason. And I completely...
It's a dark lifestyle.
It's terrible. But Saturday by like midday, I completely lost my voice. And earlier than that, because on Friday, I was sick starting Thursday. And then Friday, I was sick. And I kind of like... was able to hold back the sickness by ingesting so much, a dangerous amount of Tylenol. And on Saturday, the Tylenol was like holding the gate, and then the sickness burst through the gate, and no amount of Tylenol could possibly save me. So I came in and I had to like completely lost my voice. I sounded worse then than I do now. And my supervisor just like, yeah, I'm taking you off the schedule tomorrow. I don't care what happens for the rest of the day. You're not working tomorrow. And then I worked all day, lost my voice, and by the end, one of my last calls was a rule out stroke or TIA. So I'm in like a really packed emergency room, trying to yell over the nurse, or trying to yell over all the cacophony of the room, the details of this rule out stroke TIA to this nurse. So that was that was my work week. But I didn't work Sunday, which was nice.
Well, considerate of your workplace.
Yeah, considerate, right?
Or at the very least, it's humane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they were just like, you, no matter what happens, you're off. No chance for you tomorrow. You're gone. Worked out.
That's
fine.
Also, that's some pay right there, because that's all your overtime hours that you don't get, right?
I used my sick. I used my sick time, so...
Oh, okay.
So I should make it away fine. I wasn't really worried about it. I'm more worried about my health at this current moment. It's been hard to sleep because I have been coughing so much. If I don't, like, the Tylenol at least does enough that it makes it so that it, like, it stops the inflammation in my throat so that I don't have to cough every 1 second. And when I'm coughing, like, I wake up in the middle of the night just to cough in the furious fit, and then it gets really hard to go back to sleep. So,
you know, there are medications you can take that.
Yeah, like cough suppressants. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Like a NyQuil? Sort of a catch-all?
I don't know if NyQuil would do it. I think maybe it would. I'm not sure.
You'd be surprised. I take DayQuil sometimes, and it does more than I expect every time, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, DayQuil right now would hit the spot. Just to drink up some DayQuil.
I slammed the shot of DQ.
DQ.
podcast.
My favorite thing from DQ is the DayQuil smoothie.
I think it's called a blizzard.
The health blizzard. It's just a bunch of ice cream and DayQuil
with little crushed up Tylenols.
Little oh yeah, like crunchy Tylenols on top. Why not? Right? That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, so I guess, like, currently I'm in the state where I don't get health insurance for the next 90 days. So I'm not really sleeping. So I want to see somebody to get help with sleeping. But I don't have health insurance. So I actually have to sign up for Obamacare for, like, 3 months so that I can, like, go see a doctor, which I guess is, like, not the worst thing in the world. I mean, at least at this point I can afford to do that. Joys of being employed.
I haven't had any problems. I'm from someone who's like, I am like the master of not sleeping. And there's so many times where I don't sleep at all during the night for like 13 hour work days, which is pretty much hellish. And I kind of got it under control with like a lot of sleepy time herbal teas and like sleep pills and L-theanine. Like it's just like a cocktail that I have like. Like a poultice. Like I found so many different things, different herbal remedies to hit myself with at the end of the night that my body doesn't even know what's going on. So I actually have been getting to sleep.
Benadryl is definitely a good herbal remedy.
Well, not herbal, but remedy. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Benadryl well, as long trick. As you're not mixing alcohol with it, I guess it's all right as rain.
Well, there you go. Take a page from the Mason strategy. Benadryl yourself to sleep.
That's my plan tonight, but I guess until then, we should talk about video games.
Video games. It has been such a wild week. I'm looking right here at this giant paper that you guys can't see that has all these crazy things on it. Things that were, I'm sure we'll explain what the meaning of. But there's stuff like No Man's Sky, Hearthstone, Overwatch's Summer Games, The International, Abzu, these things. So where do you guys
play Quadrilateral Cowboy?
Oh yeah, another thing.
I only got to play the very beginning levels of it. So for those not in the know, Quadrilateral Cowboy is it's an indie PC game available now, and it's a game about hacking. So you pretty much carry around a small computer, and then you are opening it up to enter commands into a command line. It's very reminiscent of, I guess, a time that I'm not familiar with, where things were done by the command line. So you'll open up your computer and then you'll, you know, disable some doors and cameras and things like that. And pretty much you are doing heists. It sort of exists in this weird steampunky old school universe where your characters are represented by these boxy people. But if you look around, you see artifacts of who they actually are, or I guess how they're supposed to be outside of the world of this blocky representation of them. And yeah, it's got a real slick art style to it, and it's very cool. The music is very neat. It goes for sort of this Ocean's 11 vibe, even going for some of the same music that was on the Ocean's 11 soundtrack. And digging it so far, but not far enough into it to where things get like complicated or overwhelming, which is, to my understanding, what happens.
Yeah.
Are your characters and like this blocky art style meant to suggest like broken up blocky bits of ultra-processed code or something.
Maybe because the world around you is you're using like these really old school looking computers, and like you carry around a set of CRT monitors, so that when you have this little robot drone, and when you send out the little robot drone and you're issuing commands to him, you're watching him from a small like CRT monitor that you like put next to your command console. Cool. It's neat.
I was wondering, like, when I first heard about it, one thing that kind of excited me was, like, if you could learn some, like, computer language a little bit from this game. Like, I always love stuff like that so much. Like, games that teach you as you're playing them, that by learning actual real-life things, you overcome the game's mechanics.
You're not really understanding a language, but you're sort of understanding best practices for simple programming techniques. You can like batch up and create macros of different like commands to make things happen. Like there are certain areas where, for example, you can't bring in your computer, and in those areas, everything is hooked up to alarms so that if they're disabled for more than 3 seconds, the alarm will go off. So you need to set up these commands where it's like, okay, I need to disable this camera, and then I need to run in and grab the item, and then I need to run back before the camera turns back on. So you need to set up commands that are like, okay, disable the camera for 3 seconds, then put in a wait command for 10 seconds so I have time to run in and grab the item, and then disable the camera again for 3 seconds.
Yeah, I had seen stuff like that in the Giant Bomb Quick Look. Like, it seemed like, at least early on, it started to mess around with stuff like queuing actions and putting in, like, wait timers on things and stuff like that. And I wonder, like, I guess you don't know how far it goes, but I would wonder, like, how deep into that rabbit hole it gets.
Yeah, and apparently they're putting out free missions in a few weeks. So bang for the buck, I suppose, because I heard the game is pretty short as is.
I heard, like, 6 hours, I think.
All right, that's not bad at all, actually. $20 on Steam.
Yeah.
For Quadrilateral Cowboy.
I played Abzu.
Did you now? What is Abzu?
It's by Giant Squid, which is founded by Matt Navo? One of the art designers, or maybe the lead art designer, or just one of the art designers. This is getting off to a bad start. Of Flower and Journey. And it really is so much like Journey specifically, where you are kind of like moving through a linear game, and there is very little, like there's very like light gameplay elements. Most of it is to be in an area and then poke and prod around the area and like take in the sights of everything. And I like those games so much. I like the games from that game company so much, Flower and Journey, cool. Because they do away with like narrative for the most part, and they do away with like language and even like in a lot of cases gameplay to just get at this core feeling of that games can show you a changing image that you can interact with, and then also like juxtapose that with music and like make you feel a certain way. Like it's very like childlike. It's very like ethereal. Like it's never like it's usually like never like grounded in reality. But this game is interesting because it's a little bit more grounded in reality. So you play as a swimmer, and the entire game for the most part is like underwater, and you go from
like an Olympic swimmer.
Not very Olympic. I mean, I guess he would be pretty fast compared to most swimmers, because there are like most of the game has real fish, so fish that are, is designed, yeah, like real fish,
real,
real big fish.
Yeah, there are some real big fish in this game, but. Most of the game has real fish, and the fish are designed after real counterparts. So they like move at it in similar ways, and they have similar ecosystems. The fish like will eat each other, and they swim in schools and stuff. There's like there's parts of this game where there's like tens of thousands of fish on the screen at the same time, like moving like beautifully and like dancing around and like huge schools of fish, but like massive other fish that are hunting down fish in the schools of fish. And it's like so graceful as a game. Like it's fun to control the swimming character, because in like a game where the an underwater game that controls kind of well, you're basically flying. So you can just like it's amazing the way that they build these pretty large environments sometimes that are so beautiful and like have so much like coral and kelp, and they have these like active like ecosystems where on the bottom of the floor are like lobster and snails and stuff, and then there's like larger fish that are eating the smaller fish, and the smaller fish are in big schools, and the way that like the smaller fish will even like follow you around and swim with you and stuff like that. It's like it's such a beautiful looking and playing game, and it even has like kind of like a light narrative, and I really enjoyed it a lot. Like I actually can't imagine that it wouldn't be on like top 10 at the end of the year. It's just such a pretty enjoyable game. It's pretty short. It's like 2 hours for the most part, and it's like $20. It was like $15 on Steam recently after it launched, and I'm not sure if it still is. But
yeah, you know, speaking of Steam, they keep throwing up these crazy sales. I don't know if you noticed, but Doom was down to $30 again this week.
Why do they keep doing that? Stop doing that.
At this point, it kind of makes sense,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like I said, they've done it so... They brought Doom down to, like, hilarious bargain bin prices so frequently that I guess I don't know why it would be 60.
They can't back down.
They can't. That game is so good. It's so ridiculous.
Did Abzu... What was the... You gave adjectives, like ethereal and childlike, to describe the atmosphere... But how does it feel? Are you just in awe because everything's coming together, or do you feel like you're analyzing it or thinking about it too much while you're playing?
I mean, you don't have to think about it really.
You walked away with for the rest of the day or the day after.
It's like it's kind of weird because there's like Abzu and Inside are kind of similar. They're kind of like similar in the way that they like present a narrative through. So they show you a narrative, and they don't have any dialogue or even like a really clear narrative sometimes. Like they're both like kind of just based on what you're seeing and what you're feeling about what you're seeing. And Abzu doesn't have like Inside has a lot of stuff that people could like break down on forums and talk about the meaning of it and what I think happened and what do you think happened. And
what does it mean?
And with what does inside mean?
What does it mean? Yeah. What does Abzu mean?
I don't know. That's a great question. But
you think it's more up to interpretation, or it's more feeling?
Well, I don't think Abzu is like about like Abzu doesn't really do that as much as Journey or Inside would do. Abzu is really just more about like how beautiful it is in motion and like how fun it is to like simply like swim around with the fish and how like calming an experience that is. Like it doesn't really like it has like a light narrative, but that I think the narrative is like it's pretty simple. It's not the kind of thing that I could imagine anyone talking about what they think it means. Like I think it would be a little like drawn out or a little like presumptive to say that it doesn't mean like what it actually is just showing you. Like it absolutely really is just a thing where
you
like turn
narrative
your...
opens up. Is it like some guy at work and they're like, you gotta go down into this.
Well, there's no speaking
coral reef. And okay. But does it present itself like a guy like looking for something, or is the narrative like these little micro stories told by the environment? Where it, like, ooh, like I swam here and these fish ran away, and then a bigger fish saw them moving, so it ate it.
It's a little bit more that. Like there's like it's almost like I don't want to like ruin it, and at the same time it's so simple. It's like there is like
right, I just there is I wanted to know if it was constructed by the game or by you.
it is constructed by the game. There is clearly, like, there are segments where you are, like, seeing, there is, like, one fish in particular that is, like, that returns throughout the adventure, and it, like,
the Moby Dick.
It kind of, like, it's interesting because it kind of almost presents it as an antagonist, but that's about a symbol. But it's a game about, like, just constantly doing moments. Like, other than just how beautiful the areas are, like just gorgeous, gorgeous, unbelievably gorgeous areas that you're, like, swimming around that are so unbelievably, like, packed with life. Like, I really mean tens of thousands. Like, think about what it would look like to my computer is very good, but it was, like, running at, like, stable 80. Like, I don't know if it wants to push itself past that or whatever, and there wasn't, like, a frame rate unlimiter. I had fish set to ultra, by the way. When you were looking around, like, it is, like, awe-inspiring how it is, like, so much color, so much movement, just massive schools of fish and, like, larger fish, and that they're coated, and, like, their animations are so fluid and gorgeous that if you've seen, like, the way tuna swim, like, I don't know if you guys have seen tuna in an aquarium, like, they're huge and they're so, like, muscly and powerful, and fish in this game, like, look like their counterparts. Like, they have, like, very similar swimming patterns, and they have similar, like, feeding habits and stuff, and they have similar, like, school habits and stuff like that. So it's like gorgeous in motion when you just sit there on the screen and watch as, like, this a large grouper fish, like, attacks a school of fish and eats a couple of them. But then on the ground there's, like, a slow moving snail and a little, like, scurrying lobster, and then, like, a school of swish of like little fish, like anchovy, swims by. Like, it's just so beautiful.
Cool. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess we're getting a lot of these surprise games, which is always nice.
I would really wholeheartedly, like, if there's anything interesting about what I said and you would spend, like, $15 or $20 to play, like, a really short game just to, it's cool because a lot of games do ask a lot of you, like, the inside comparison I mentioned originally, because in it, when you're playing inside, you're kind of always thinking about, like, what does the developer want me to think about what's happening? And you're thinking about, like, the grander meaning behind what you're seeing or what the game is trying to tell you. And Abzu is, like, not that at all. Like, it is really a game where you can, like, turn your head off of, like, what the game is trying to tell you. You turn your head off of, like, have I checked every nook and cranny of this area? Because you don't need to. Like, the game is just, it's so freeform. It's like, you can stay in any area as much as you want. You can leave an area as quickly as you want. The game is very linear. It's not presenting you with, like, a complicated story or complicated narrative. So, like, what you want out of it is always, like, what you're going to get. Like, if you just want
to... Did you,
like,
return to it after finishing?
Yeah. I played it again, actually. It is so short. It is really short, and...
So did you play... The second time around, did you play it on, like, the hard mode? On, like, the challenge mode?
There's no modes. I don't know
what
that...
You have to control the different flippers with the different buttons on the keyboard.
Oh, that would just be unbelievably annoying.
Independently of one another.
You played with the controller, right?
Yeah, they recommend you play with the controller. But it's cool because... It's cool because you play so many games, like, that make me feel a certain way, where I feel like if I'm going through, like, a dungeon and I am Setsuna, that if I've gone far this way and I can tell that there's a door leading out of the area, like, I'll go back and then check the other pathways that I didn't fully explore to their end. Like, it feels like you have to, like, look at every nook and cranny to get everything out of the game. And this is a game that, like, doesn't ask that at all of you. Like, you can just enjoy it and just stay in an area for 15 minutes just sitting around, like, watching it or not.
A classic JRPG style of choring your way through an area for the meagerest rewards.
Oh yeah,
a chest with an herb
near like the very end of I Am Setsuna. They give you a world key that allows you to unlock the chests you've been seeing, because throughout the entire game from the very beginning, there are these chests that are locked that you can't open. So at the very end of the game, before the final area, they give you a key that allows you to unlock the chests that are in every single, like, dungeon, village, outpost, everything. And you, and like, and like, it's such a JRPG thing.
Is it
where,
even worth it?
Where, like, you're, there's, like, really strong stuff in the chest. Like, that's where, like, the end game items and, like, power-ups and end game, like, spells and stuff are. So,
what?
So you get, like, this last key, and you get the airship, and then you go fly around to, like, the starter town and the starter dungeons and, like, run through them with their super weak enemies and, like, find the one chest. Because every single area, like, every town has, like, one of these chests and every, like, dungeon and
forest. Is this something that you're doing?
I did it for a little bit, yeah, to get, like, some of the stronger things.
Did you beat the final boss without doing so?
I haven't beat the final boss yet. I'm at the supposed, like, last area. The last lands, they are called. By the way, names of towns in I Am Setsuna are, like, Gatherington, stuff like that. Like, there's this town that this Mad King was using to fortify with people he was going to sacrifice to monsters called Tenderville. Tenderville? Come on, right. What are you doing?
Translation, come on, man. It's just a translation thing.
Yeah. I don't know. That game is so... I wanted so much more of that game. Like, it knows so much about what you expect about JRPGs. And if you've played, like, Final Fantasy X, which is what it rips its story off of, and Chrono Trigger, which is what it rips its battle system off of, like, it knows you played those games. And then it just completely goes in that direction. It's so weird that it doesn't set an alley-oop up of I know what the audience is expecting. Now we take the hard right twist and go the completely other way and shock you.
Now we pull the football away from their foot,
yeah,
right as they're about to kick it.
Yeah, I mean, that would perfect. Yeah,
Charlie Brown.
I would love to be setting like I would love to have that thing where I'm on a boat and then it rocks and then I think like, oh my god, there's gonna be a sea monster, and then I'm ready to kick that football, and then you come up on top of the ship, and then they're like, no, that was just me. I don't know. I was just rocking the boat. Whatever. That's it. We're gonna arrive safely in this town. There was no problem.
A tongue-in-cheek reference, some cliche.
Yeah.
Instead of just a re-experiencing of it.
Yeah, because like it's weird because I Am Setsuna is in its core a like an attempt to return to form for what made RPG special. But you know what made RPG special was when you played them for the first time and they created all these memories. And this game doesn't create new memories. It makes it just shows you the old ones. Like it's like,
oh, no.
Like why would like if I'm someone who played Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy X, and I really and I'm reading the and you're reading the I Am Setsuna page that is like, yeah, this is the story of Final Fantasy X with the battle system of Chrono Trigger, and like you want to experience that nostalgia, go play those games. Like this is like half those things in a way that it doesn't create like new memories. It just like half-heartedly kind of like remembers reminds you of the old ones. Like it doesn't do
even
enough in service of these new characters.
Even though you haven't completed it, you think you're close enough to the end that it's irredeemable, even if they throw something bizarre at the final boss battle or.
Well, I'm 16 hours in and.
What if after you beat the final boss, they loop the game?
Then I will not. I promise you that if they like loop the game and reset it and then have me have to play it again, then I will log off and I will delete it from my Steam account.
Like you have to play the same game through spring, summer, and fall.
Well, exactly. That would almost be better than the way that Bravely Default does it.
That'll be in the sequel. You know, I remember that key thing, the magic key, master key, whatever, having a key, a skeleton key. Yeah, you get those in, like, Dragon Warrior and Dragon Quest games, too.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. What am I supposed to do? Write down
where they were.
I found this thing. I'll have to go back.
I don't think it's enjoyable.
That's why they give you a notes section in the manual.
I don't think it's enjoyable, man.
It's a guidebook. I don't know. I don't know why it's there.
What's the point, though?
The I Am Setsuna is everything of that. Like, I Am Setsuna is all these things that you've had 15 years to think about. Why can't you get them right? Like, it bugs the hell out of me that I have a party of six people and everyone is a one line. Everyone is like, hey, that's Kier. He's the funny, quirky little kid mage. And like, he's pretty naive. And then, hey, that's Nadir. He's like this gruff older dude that went along. He's Orin is what he is. He's exactly Orin. And then there's Setsuna. She's the like nice female lead that is unwaveringly simple, Yuna, that is sacrificing herself, and she is unwaveringly nice. And every situation you get into where there's a situation where, like, your character is like, are we going to kill this guy? Should we finish him off? Then Setsuna's like, no, guys, no, we have to let him be. Like, you know what every character is going to say in every dialogue situation because they're all so simple. And
she's so submissive and shy, I could fall in love.
Yeah. it's ridiculous because like instead of having six characters when you can only have three at a time fighting anyway, like why don't you just have three characters and then make their personalities like way more complex and make it so that like they do stuff that is like outside of their character? Like, I think it's bad writing when a character always does what you expect them to do. Like, people aren't like that. Like, even if I have a belief that I hold really true, like, there's times where, and in certain situations, where I'll go against that or do something the opposite of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make a strong character that you say Setsuna is kind and sacrifices herself, and she's always willing to let the bad guy go. Like, she always does it. Like, no one does that. Like, it doesn't make any sense that she does it every single time. She never, like, subverts that. She always is that. Whenever there's a situation where you're about to do that and, like, put the final blow on an enemy, she's always there to be like, no, guys, I think we shouldn't do it. And it's like, it gets so lame.
Know,
it's
have,
like,
you seen, have you seen Batman? He gets away with it.
Yeah, he does.
I saw Suicide Squad.
How
Batman
was that?
Batman is still a little more complicated of a character than it sounds like Setsuna is.
And maybe more complicated than the characters in Suicide Squad as well.
What a transition. What a segue.
My opinion on that movie is that it is horrendously written. Like, the plot is just terrible. The writing for the characters is terrible. But the actors and actresses did a really good job with what they had. So it was really well acted. The aesthetics of the movie is really good. And it was also really fun.
Okay.
Ugh, I hate that word.
What, fun?
Yeah, I want my games to be fun, not my movies.
Well, then you probably wouldn't like Suicide Squad, because I think that it's an apt description.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree, but I always hear people describe like a superhero or like lighthearted action movies like that, and I never enjoy those movies, so I've learned to steer away from anything described as fun.
Lighthearted. Sean's not a lighthearted person.
No, I'm that edgy, dark, brooding character that maybe is the main character.
You're Ender.
That you want.
You're Ender, the dark, brooding character from a far-off land, who's sent to kill Setsuna, but ends up falling in love with her. He wears a mask and uses a sword. He's strong.
There's
like
one
Ender.
Character that really wants to teach me about the simple and fun things in life, like human movies, and I'm like, no, I don't have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the point of these trivialities? And then you like brandish your sword, your katana.
So is Suicide Squad a movie that you would recommend? Are you someone who read the comics before? Did you have any previous interest? Like, is it recommendable? Because like these fun superhero movies are a dime a dozen. I mean,
originally Suicide Squad was an animated like film, like an hour and 16 minutes long, and it was sort of like about Batman going into Arkham to sort of battle the Joker after he had this hostile takeover. So there's this interesting thing where he's going in there with Harley to go solve this mission, and that's kind of cool. But that's not what happens in Suicide Squad, which like has the Joker in it, but he's like, he's not the protagonist and he's not the antagonist. He's just there because well, if you have Harley Quinn, you have to have the Joker because the Joker sells stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're interested in the Suicide Squad as an idea, then there's definitely better media to digest. That's probably more up your alley than this actual movie is.
That's pretty dark.
But I kind of did like the style they had. Like, you could tell that it was very like hip hop inspired, even like the way that the Joker was dressed and acted in the soundtrack. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I still kind of dug it, but the main antagonist is just super lame. The movie was like, I think it was trying to be campy, but like at times it just like didn't hit those campy marks where you didn't understand, like, are they trying to be serious? Are they trying to make a joke out of this? And they fall into like that uncanny valley of like, this isn't endearing and it's not serious. So it just kind of, you know, is flat.
I see. Yeah, that sounds relevant to what I heard about scenes being changed or removed or something because they were trying to slip it between R and PG-13, I guess. There might be a director's cut kind of version coming.
Yeah, you can definitely see it being a PG-13 movie with a lot of action like happening off screen. A lot of the fights are very like jarring and not cohesive and easy to follow, mostly because I think they were trending in that direction.
Maybe that also, and the writing will feel a little bit different with a second version, if anyone cares.
Yeah, but that's not a video game.
No. Remember when they used to make video games out of every movie?
Yeah.
What would this game be like? It would be a brawler. It'd be a side-scrolling brawler. A beat-em-up. That would be pretty... I'm into that.
That was the that was the popular trend for superhero games back in the day.
Yeah, why not, right?
So here's something I was thinking about with the treasure chests that you find in various JRPGs at the end of the game. And also something my friend, one of my coworkers, he was talking to me how he was interested in starting a Pathfinder Dungeons and Dragons story.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was running the story by me, and something about it that he brought up made me start thinking about something I had been thinking about already with video games and now Pathfinder. He wanted the main villain of his story to, like, basically like infect someone with a sickness. And I told him that if one of your players of your group of friends, if his character is sick, either that kind of cripples his character and it's not fun to play anymore for him, or it's really benign and kind of just an irritating, like, meaningless part of the story.
Like, yeah, sure. You have, like, status effects in JRPGs when you get poisoned with poison, exactly. And then poison, you're walking around, and then it makes the screen flash and makes an annoying noise, and it's so annoying, right. But it's, like, not really a mechanic that you really think about. Or fixing it.
If it's too strong, it's, like, a devastating effect, but if it's too weak, it's just, like, why am I poisoned at all?
A lot of D&D makes it pretty friggin' devastating, though. Like, D&D, usually diseases in D&D, like, lower your actual, like, stats. And stats in D&D are so important because they're usually, yeah, like they modify rolls and stuff like that. So you end up, like, losing rolls or losing, like, max health and, like, max stats and stuff. And, like, sometimes it's, like, and usually, like, the cures for it are so difficult to get. It's kind of, like, a little bit better balanced in D&D because it's the kind of thing where, like, you get punished for doing something stupid or without, like, thinking at all about it. Like, opening this, like, book and then, like, poison hits you, and then you also, like, fail a roll to save yourself, and then you get poisoned with it, and you have to, like, go through the effort of finding someone to cure it and paying lots of money and stuff, and it's a much bigger deal.
Yeah, I feel like in his specific situation he would need to give a benefit to being infected too, but the downside is that, like, at some point the character becomes a product of the story and not a product of the player, and that could be frustrating, I suppose. Huh.
Those are interesting. That I didn't expect to hear any of that from you guys. That's interesting. Because I haven't played D&D before. But,
oh, we played Pathfinder, yeah.
Yeah, I recall. I was interested in it too. But in in video games, like the poison status effect, and same with the treasure chests scattered across the world, there's like this unfortunate thin balance of, if it's worth going to those treasure chests, then you have to go to them, and like, just why?
You have to backtrack across the whole world.
Yeah,
it's funny because like what should be there instead is like some sort of fight or some sort of content that gets you that strong item.
Yeah,
it's just like a sour way. Like the reward is supposed to be the key,
and it's tedious to get the key. Yeah, like yeah,
and then you see the key and you're like, oh man, I know there's so many possibilities are opened up to me. But these possibilities are things that you've seen through the game that have just been like, now they just devolve into backtracking. It's an interesting and exciting to get that key, but the actual use of it is just miserable.
Yeah, right. And if it wasn't exciting to open those chests, then you would get the key and just think, well, there's that useless key everyone talks about. I don't need to go back and get those things. Yeah, it would be nice if they had like alternate fights there.
Yeah. and similarly, like status effects suck too. Like they're pretty lame in JRPGs. And then in a lot of cases, near the end of the game, you know how like when the items start getting better, you go from stuff like antidote and smelling, like antidote for poisons and smelling salt for sleep and like all this other, like other stuff like calming sand for berserk and stuff like that. Like all these ridiculous items, and then by the end of the game, they start selling like a panacea where it'll just cure your status effects. So like likewise, it gets it the status effects like boil down to this kind of simple thing where you have a cure all. So whenever enemies put like a spell that like completely like dispels all bad status effects. So you just get to this point at the end of the game where it's like, do I wanna actually cleanse off the poison, or is it bad enough? Is it like stop is a really bad effect, because it makes it so you can't move or take your turns. So, like, when that happens, you just panacea it. But then you get, like, stuff like poison, and it's just kind of lame and frustrating. Like it's you're just weighing, like, whether or not it's annoying enough to you that, like, is it going to kill me? Is there going to be a time where it adds up the damage enough that it's a problem? Do I even waste a character's turn by cleansing it? I don't know. Yeah. It never feels like a fun thing. I feel like, Darkest Dungeon kind of did a decent job with status effects. Like,
yeah, I was going to ask if there were alternatives. Yeah, because this comes down, it sounds like a question of difficulty.
Darkest Dungeon kind of did that because the dungeons ran pretty long and the status effects were so damning, but it actually felt kind of rewarding to prepare for them. So if you knew that there were enemies in a dungeon that have an ability that poison you, then before you go into the dungeon, you can spend some money on equipping your characters with antidotes or stuff like that, or smelling salts and all that kind of stuff. And you felt it was like, it's a game that like makes you feel rewarding when you get poisoned because the enemy like wasted their turn poisoning you. And then maybe you win the fight after you didn't take any damage. And then you instantly cleanse off and at the end you use the antidote on the poison. And then you feel like intelligent about planning ahead and stuff like that. And it feels good. But in JRPGs, like there's not a, it's not like in I Am Setsuna, you're in the town and then people are saying, hey, by the way, I sell antidotes. The upcoming forest has plenty of these creatures. Watch out for their poisonous attacks and stuff like that, that you like are thinking about it.
So
and
really
that you're
stilted, bizarre villager talk.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. Like, I mean, it's more intelligent because then it adds like gameplay space around like, I was walking around a village and I was talking to everyone, and because I talked to everyone, I was rewarded with knowledge. And or you know, that simple thing where like the villager's like, hey, I ran into the woods and I was poisoned by a monster, here's a free antidote. And then not only are you like tipped off to the fact that you need to buy antidotes, you get that one antidote for free, so it like feels kind of rewarding. And then when you come across the enemies and they poison you, it's like, like, I knew, and I went to the potion dealer for this reason, so that I could cleanse off the antidote. Like
this is, like, the bare minimum effort to make
Yeah,
this
like, but it doesn't even do that. Like, it doesn't do that much.
Yeah,
like,
I feel like
it's just frustrating when it happens.
With status effects, I feel like status effects are really bad in games that have backtracking. But in games that don't have backtracking, they usually end up being okay. Like, in Monster Hunter, lots of different status effects and they can be pretty debilitating. You need to plan for them beforehand, but because of the fact that there's no backtracking, it's not like, oh, I got poisoned, now I have to go back to town.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I got poisoned, I need to either, I need to find time in this fight to heal myself, I need to lose the health, or I need to just tough it out because I didn't bring anything, or I need to go through the arena and find the ingredients that I need in order to concoct an antidote and use it.
Crafting during a hunt?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that Monster Hunter does a much better job with it because it doesn't make it your status quo. That's the problem with you during that fight. And Monster Hunter has always been about preparing for it. So if you lose a fight because a monster can poison you, then it's a part of the actual fight. Like, instead of doing damage that time, the monster poisoned you. And it's a good thing if you prepared for it and then you find the time to get out of the fight and then cleanse it off. And that when you lose the fight, it's over anyway, because, like, you don't have a chance to go back to town anyway. So, like, you have to deal with it or fight against it. So I agree with you. It's a game that makes it work. That makes it so that, like, it makes sense that there's a lot of different problems in Monster Hunter, because if Monster Hunter had only one status effect, for example, and it was just poison, then you could always prepare for it. You could always have, like, an antidote ready for it. And because it has so many, you have to know ahead, like, you have to prepare ahead, or go in and then lose a fight, and then gather information on the monster, and then go back with the, like, appropriate, with intel, the appropriate items and intel, yeah. Like, that's that I think is design space that you can actually, like, use. But yeah, again, like, I am Setsuna constantly, like, using, you know, what's weird. I had this thought while I was playing I am Setsuna that I don't think that for something that for JRPGs, a well-worn territory that has existed, like that gameplay, that general kind of gameplay, narrative, story arc, game where you're going linearly from dungeon to overworld to town to dungeon to overworld and stuff like that. That formula has existed for like well over 20 years. And even then playing them right now, playing like a modern one, if you could call I Am Setsuna that, I feel like they never got it right. Like, I feel like for the most part, there's always like aspects of it that I don't think that they like plumbed out correctly, that they like took to their 10th degree, that they made turn-based combat feel both like strategic and intelligent while still making it so that it like it has some sort of like skill involved, not making it so that everyone is the game is just like, well, the boss is hard because you need to grind, and then when you grind you invalidate the boss entirely. Like, there's never, like, there's so many mechanics in JRPGs that are not a middle ground, and they're so, like, brainlessly simple in a way that, like, of all games, I think Pokemon literally does a better job with turn-based combat, because Pokemon has this way more complicated rock, paper, scissors. But in JRPGs, the rock, paper, scissors is just, this boss is weak to fire, so you do fire on it.
Yeah, Pokemon is a game that does not deal well with status effects.
Agreed. That's what I was about to say.
It just seems crazy that after all this time that I really was looking for the doom in I Am Setsuna. I was really looking for this game that they've had decades to sit on these JRPGs tropes, decide what we want to take forward, what we don't. What we know that people are expecting this kind of thing about out of the narrative, so how can we take it, subvert it? We know we've seen like Persona and Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy games, and what has worked, what have fans liked, what has critically been a failure, and what has critically worked. And it's like you want them to take all this and then make this stew of, like, here's what worked in JRPGs, and here's what
here
didn't work.
Here is Setsuna.
Here is Setsuna. I am Setsuna. And like, I don't want to just keep harping on it, but yeah, for the second week, it is a bummer that it's not that at all. That it is all the things that you liked and hated about it, and for the most part, all the things you hated about it. Like, all these, like, frustrating things that, like, why would I enjoy that? Why would I be happy about that? Boss encounters that make me like redo dungeon areas because I didn't know going into the boss that, like, the boss is weak to this thing, and I didn't put it in my party. You can't swap out characters. So like, mechanics that are, like, well, the boss is weak to fire, and then fighting the boss, like, well, I don't have my fire person in the party at the time, so what do I do? Like, I can't outplay it. Like, it's a very simple game for the most part. Unless I'm, like, way leveled up, then, like, I'm gonna have to grind it out. But then there's this simple strategy where, like, the boss is designed where it's like, well, if you know, if you either are lucky enough to try this out, or if you go online and check out beforehand, if you put this character in the party, it's weak to this status thing, or, like, it's weak to you hasting your party, or weak to stop, and stuff like that. So, like, they're full of all these, like, dumb little things where if you have a guide, you're gonna win.
The villagers don't tell you?
They should! Like, that's the kind of thing where it's, like, you have these villagers that say these simple, stupid things, like my dad went on out on a hunting trip. He always finds the best deer meat. Like, what does that mean? Like, I don't care. Or, like, simple, like, they're always, like, these, like, simple lines of dialogue that they re-say where it's like, I'm afraid the monsters are outside of the town. Please go outside and help us. Like, stuff like that, where it's like, why did I need to read that? That wasted 30 seconds of my time. Whatever. I'm sick of I Am Setsuna. No more. No more of that Garbo. I think one of the most interesting things of the week, and it's going to be hard to not just beat the most deadest horse of all time, is Hearthstone. And
I saw those commercials when I was trying to watch Twitch streams on my phone in
for One Night in Karazhan.
Yeah, have you seen those?
They're good. I think I like them.
The 15-second commercials.
I love the Hearthstone commercials. Always, like, they're like well animated. They do a good job of, like, unique. Yeah, they're very unique. They do a good job of, like, hitting the theme of what it's going to be about. Like, Whispers of the Old Gods is a spookier commercial, and it gets that across, and it's about the old gods. So it kind of does tell you in a way, like thematically, what the next Hearthstone expansion is. Like, is it a fun expansion? Is it a spookier expansion and stuff? Like, what area of WoW lore is it based on?
I like those commercials. I have to definitely give credit to the, like, wild club scene of Karazhan.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed with One Night in Karazhan when it was originally announced, because I really like Karazhan. It's my favorite raid, and it's a very, like, fascinating lore area. And they did it in this way that it's, like, it's Karazhan, but it's jokey Karazhan. Like, the card art is kind of funny and jokey and, like, hokey looking.
And the cards themselves
are very funny and stuff like that. Like, Moroz has this, like, goofy art, and it's like, I remember that being, like, a tough boss battle and everything. And
yeah, and they put out this really good joke card called Purify. It's it's a laugh riot.
So that's the thing that I wanted to talk about. Like, like, of course it's the thing I want to talk about. It's Purify, because everyone is talking about it. And I mean, this podcast, we always like, that's one of my favorite things, that this podcast was literally started to be, like, a audio, we are, like, looking at subcultures and moments in subcultures, and Hearthstone is having a moment for sure, because before the cards were announced for the entire expansion, and expansions are small, by the way. They're very small.
They're 40. Yeah, it's 45 cards.
Where classes get, each class gets 3 individual cards, and it's 45 cards as a whole. So you're getting a lot of neutrals, and you're getting some legendaries and stuff. But they're small, so they don't really affect the meta in a lot of ways. Like, the most successful expansion has been, like, League of Explorers, which has probably been one of the most fun times to play Hearthstone, I guess, even though it was in, like, a really shit metagame when it hit, and maybe, who knows, everyone hated, before League of Explorers came out, it was, like, doom and gloom. It was like, there's no way this expansion is gonna fix this, like, nightmare we're living in right now. And in a lot of ways, despite how small League of Explorers is, an adventure and not an expansion, it did do pretty healthy things for Hearthstone, and it enabled these healthy archetypes. And it paved the way for a healthier Hearthstone, especially when Standard hit. But I don't know if that's the case now, and of all cards, so Blizzard announced
Purify is too good, right?
Blizzard announced all the cards, and Priest is in a horrible spot, and there was a lot of rumblings of, like, specifically fans and non-fans of Priest, even, were expecting, like, Priest is going to get the good stuff, because Priest is in a terrible, terrible spot. There's no viable decks. There's no way they're not going to get some really good cards, even if the cards don't put Priest into into an amazing spot right now. At the very least, they will start building some new Priest archetypes, and they announced they gave Priest what this is not me that is saying this. This is every single streamer and every single professional Hearthstone player saying this exact thing, and that is that they made the worst card in the entire game, and they gave it to Priest. And you only get three cards that are class cards in an adventure, and two of them for Priest are like one is okay, but not that great. That's Priest of the Feast. One of them is really boring and too fair and not good enough, and that is Onyx Bishop. And then there's Purify, and it's the worst card ever printed. So it's fascinating, and I wanted to talk about it really quickly because Purify is a card. It is a 2-mana card that silence only your minion and then draw a card, okay? So the initial...
Silence a minion.
Silence only...
A friendly minion.
A friendly minion, okay? So the interesting thing here is that... And for the large part, they have, like, removed a lot of silence effects because they went away from that, and it, like, limits design space. Silence beats everything. Silence beats, like, buffs and taunts and everything, and making, like, cheap silence or cheap removal limited a lot of the design space, made it so that everything is weak, because silence beats everything. So they mostly took away silence, but they still, like, have silences in the game, and Priest has... And the important thing to stack this up with is that Priest has a card called Silence that is 0 mana, silence a minion. So you can silence your allied minion, or you can silence an enemy minion. So this is important to know. So when you think about Purify, 2 mana, silence a minion, draw a card, the first thing you must think is that, and they even said it on the stream, like, this is a Priest shenanigan card, you know, this is going to be a crazy thing. Okay, so the first thing you think, and maybe you don't even know Hearthstone, maybe you're Sean and you haven't played that much Hearthstone, the first thing you're going to think is, like, well, there's got to be cards that have really bad effects, right? There's got to be cards that have...
Yeah, my immediate thought was, wow, this is probably so good, there's probably some...
There's probably some crazy cards that are bad.
Nice.
So let me, there are exactly like 5, I think, cards in the game that have negative effects that you would want to silence, okay? In the current game, there are like 5, in the current standard format, there are like 5 cards that do things that are either supposedly negative or definitely negative that you don't want. So, for example, let's start off. The 2 most important cards to mention, because the 2 cards that you would most want to silence to get value out of them are Ancient Watcher and Eerie Statue. Ancient Watcher is a 2-mana, 4/5, cannot attack, okay? There's already been, like, early on, there was a lot of shenanigans with this in Druid. Druid has a card that they don't use anymore because it's bad. Keeper... Keeper of the Grove that can do 2 damage or silence, and what it would do, what they would do is they would be able to play this for 2 mana on early turns, because they were like ramp druids, they didn't have early minions, and then later on they would be able to activate it by silencing it, okay? And they would be able to play this other card and then activate their 4/5 that they played for 2 that they'd be able to attack with now. Okay, so think about this card. Think about Priest playing a 4/5 for 2 mana. The immediate thing you have to think about is that why didn't Priest already do this thing? They have a card called Silence for 0 mana. If there was literally anything in the game that was broken that allowed you to silence your own minions to get value, then even if you don't know anything about Hearthstone, you look at both these cards, you look at a card that costs zero mana in a combo, inherently combos are asking you to use two cards. Why would you not want to use the lower cost card? So now you're looking at Purify, and why would the reason that a card silence would, if you put silence in your deck, it's zero mana, you could silence your minions or your enemy minions, and it's zero mana. So Purify is limited because you can only silence your own minions, and then it draws a card. So how much is the two card, the draw a card value in Hearthstone? It's not even close to two mana. Like, there are cards, there's a two mana card in the game that is two mana summon a 1/1 draw a card, and people don't even really use that. And then there's other cards, like, for example, there's a rogue card, two mana deal one damage, and draw a card. That is a two mana card that has a positive effect and draws a card. Then there's cards like Warrior, two mana, draw a card for every single minion that has taken damage, for every damage character. So that's
this your list goes on.
And then another warrior card, two mana, draw a card, and your minions cannot be lowered below one health. So there's all these two mana cards that both draw a card and then do a positive effect. But this is a priest card, the worst class in the game, that does only a negative effect and then draw a card. Like, I don't even care what you think about silence. Like, the cases that it would be strong, where it's like, yeah, it would be strong because you have a 2-mana 4/5, and then it can't attack, and then you silence it, and now it can attack, and you drew a card, so it technically was positive. Like, no, it wasn't, because silence is zero, and you're paying 2-mana to draw a card. Like, Flare already does that, and then it removes spell secrets and stealths. So there's all these 2-mana cards that already do that and then do a positive thing. So anyway, let's think back on this, on what I just said. There's a 2-mana 4/5 in the game, and you could silence it for 2-mana and draw a card. Do you know what that would mean? You spent 4-mana to summon a 4/5. Do you know what that is? That's a Yeti. That's what a Yeti is. You spent a 2-card combo to make a Yeti. Like,
the Yetis and cards like that, and my thought that you were going to end on, I was like,
crazy that is. Think about how crazy that is. There is one card in the game that is 4-mana 4/5, no text. Then there's two cards in the game that are 2-mana 4/5 can attack, and then 2-mana silence a minion and then draw a card. So what you did was you spent 2 cards to make a 1 card in the game that already exists. So the only other card that like would have any good value out of this is Eerie Statue, which is a 4-mana 7/7. The card text reads, can only attack when there's no minion, when there's no other minions on the board. So it's good in mostly bad cases, it's mostly a bad card. So if you silenced it, then it would be a 7/7 body, right? So then you're paying a 4/5/6, 6-mana 7/7. Is that good enough? No. There's already 4-mana 7/7s in the game that that's Flame Wreath Faceless. Flame Wreath Faceless already has that combo in it where it takes that 2-mana from you the next turn. So there's literally nothing in the game that like you really get value off of wanting to spend the extra 2-mana to silence your own minion. And it's so limited because it only allows you to silence your own minion. And then those are basically the only 2 cards. Like, there's this other card, Moat Creeper, that allows you to kill a minion, then it has a death rattle, resummon the minion. So then like that's the argument too, is like, well, you'd be able to silence that. But still, like, if silence were ever strong, then there already is a 0-mana card that silences. So if these silence shenanigans were strong, that would be the card you would want to use anyway. So like, it's baffling. Like, the people are so frustrated and in arms with it because like Blizzard is the company that makes the cards, and they made this, there's 3 cards that are class cards in the adventure, and they're the worst class, and then they give them an objectively bad card. They gave them the objectively worst card in the game. Like, there's no possible, before it even came out, there's literally no chance of it being good.
I have to cast stop on you right now.
Yeah.
I totally get it. It's the crazy thing is, it just seems really thoughtless. I immediately understood, like, the thing with the Yeti.
So yeah, it's pretty much turned into a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they say anything? Did Blizzard say, whoops?
No, that's the nightmare. Is like, and I this drives me crazy when developers do this. But
one developer commented that he said, in the case of Priest, we were happy with the amount of options the class was getting from neutrals, Barnes, Curator, Medivh, and the Dragon cards to do some testing with a new archetype that Purify could be a part of.
Yeah, but everyone else is getting those cards, and I don't think that like any of those are strong enough to make Priest like so good. Like Barnes is the one that people think could be a good Priest card, but it's mostly going to be a good everyone card. Like, how is it not a good card for warriors that are already the strongest class? Like, they play tons of big minions. Like, a control warrior could use this and then axe and then get like their free rag or their free Ysera, stuff like that. Or control paladin gets their free Tyrion. Like, stuff, there's already classes that do better than this. Like, there's nothing in the neutrals that scream, like, this is going to break Priest, or this is going to this is going to be the thing that makes Priest better. And it's weird, because the other thing that's so sad about the expansion is that there's mostly no new design things. Like, do you remember when the Grand Tournament came out, and it's based on Inspire, and Inspire didn't really work out? But for the most part, the cool thing is that, like, it was an expansion based around new mechanics and using hero powers in a different way. And then they come out with, like, different expansions or adventures that are built around, like, having new mechanics or having, like, new wacky ways to play the game. And this is not that expansion. Like, it doesn't come out with anything new. For the most part, it's probably going to make Beast Druid really strong. The current things that are strong are strong. There's not, like, any new real mechanics. I think maybe one of the most new mechanics in the game is, like, making this discard warlock a thing, and it might actually be a thing. I'm not sure how that will work out. But for the most part, it's, like, it's a really lame adventure. And it's sad, because the way
you
that...
You don't like five cards that summon random things?
No, those suck. Those are terrible.
I feel like they made those specifically for the Olympics, right?
Maybe. They made
five portals, and the ring colors are representative of the five Olympic rings.
Yeah, people are saying that.
That's a really poor excuse to print five bad cards.
Why do video games love the Olympics now?
I don't know. It's just
because it's international, so it captures an international audience.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that to cap out the Hearthstone thing, it's just frustrating the way that Blizzard does balances, because they don't interact with the community. They don't really do balance updates, even when the game, like, they're so like set on like, well, if something is broken, then the community should find counters for it, even though, like, the community is much quicker to find, like, the community is so much larger than Blizzard, so they're trying things that, like, Blizzard couldn't possibly have the time or, like, development effort or like intelligence to try, because like developers are never better at min-maxing their games than their fan bases. Like, they have, like, they work for a living, and sure, they think about the game, but then they have fans that, like, are people who get paid to play the game, or kids who, like, don't work, who sit around and play Hearthstone and just, like, theorycraft and stuff like that. So, like, fans and for the most part, like, find out everything that could possibly be true, and then they, like, they're hitting it, and they're trying the craziest stuff with millions of people doing the same thing. So, like, they find the strong decks and optimize very quickly. And Blizzard, like, refuses to talk about it. They refuse to release balance patches. And the main way that they balance the game is by releasing new expansions or adventures that like, release new archetypes or like, make cards that solve their other problems. And this, like, expansion doesn't really seem to do anything. And then there's not going to be nothing for, like, 4 months, probably. Like, it's a bummer. Like, it's really hard not to be upset about that current state, and not to be, like, as the adventure is almost out, all you can think about is, like, well, this is what we get for 4 months, and it doesn't look like anything in here is going to solve the problems. And Priest will still suck, and then they got, like, Purify as a card and stuff like that, and it's
fascinating to look at, but I think that we should also look at Blizzard's other Olympic offerings in Overwatch.
Oh, yeah, the summer games.
You know, because, like, that released after the podcast last week. Well,
So yeah, they're doing the Summer Games, and they have Lucio Ball, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But I think one of the most interesting things about Summer Games is that they released new skins and sprays and like new cosmetics and stuff, and they're made it so that the cosmetics are not purchasable with the in-game currency. What do you guys think about that?
Okay, so it's a problem because you've got. Think about how many items there are. So they added 100 new items. They added a new type of loot box, and in every loot box, you get one item from the Summer Games. Can you get more than one?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. But what it means is that if you were to spend, let's say you spend $50 on this on the Summer loot boxes.
I did.
There's an awfully good chance that you don't complete the collection.
Yeah. I will tell you, okay, so from my perspective, I've probably been playing the most Hearthstone out of either of you, and...
What about the most Overwatch?
The most Overwatch, yeah. I've been playing the most of it, so, like, I've been leveling up and getting the summer loot boxes, and I also did the big purchase. I always forget how much that is. I want to say it's, like, $40 for 50.
I think it's... yeah, yeah, that's right.
So, when I bought that, I got one of each of the legendaries... I got one of the Tracer summer legendaries, the Lucio one and the Zarya one, as well as like the Tracer play of the game intro, the new one, the new Lucio play of the game intro. I got most of the rare or the epic skins. I got the epic Nihon Genji. I got the epic Taiguk. Diva, probably saying that wrong.
So my point is to say
that it for the most part, it kind of actually looks like when you're doing the summer games there, because Blizzard actually does this a lot. It looks like there is a internal clock that counts like how many boxes till your next legendary, you know, and because they do that in Hearthstone, by the way, where like they have this like loser mechanic where every time you open a pack that doesn't have a legendary, it starts raising the chance to find a legendary, and then when you find one, you lose the pity percentage, and then it resets. So
they do that in Diablo too.
So yes. I got one of each of the legendaries, and I also got multiple other of the classic legendaries. So it seemed like they were kind of like on different timers and cooldown, like they were on different like pity levels.
Sure.
And
I think that the main problem with these boxes though is simply that you have 3 weeks to unlock everything, and then they go back in the vault.
Yes.
And honestly, like, when are they going to release Olympic skins again? Maybe they can next year. For next summer to bring them out of the vault. But yeah. It seems weird to create this sort of scarcity in a game that doesn't have a marketplace to begin with.
I thought a lot about this, and that definitely was my first reaction when I originally heard about like the Olympic skins not being not being able to purchase them, and the fact that you have like 3 weeks to get what you want out of it, and then it goes away, and then it comes back like annually. What?
Especially if $40 and a lot of playtime isn't completing the set for you.
Yeah. I thought about that. I kind of like an aspect of this though. And like I'm like that one percenter, and like I bought the I'm the whale. Like I buy Overwatch packs and stuff. I have 9,000 gold in Overwatch, by the way. Like if new skins come out, dog, I got them. I kind of like, because I don't even have I don't have the reverse. I don't have, like, there's two legendaries of each of the new ones, and I didn't get the Zarya one I wanted. I wanted the white-red Zarya, not the full-red Zarya. And I kind of wanted the white jersey Lucio, not the yellow jersey Lucio that I have. And I kind of, like an aspect of it, because, like, you can already kind of get whatever you want. So, like, at this point, especially when I'm playing with, like, mostly people who are, like, high level, like in the 100 levels or in the 200 levels, you have anything you want. Like, nothing is rare. Everyone has legendary skins, and there isn't a marketplace. But it's kind of cool that like the event goes down in 3 weeks, and maybe someone starts playing Overwatch afterwards and sees a skin that, like, I don't know, how do you get this Lucio skin, or how do you get this Zarya skin? Or even if you played during the time and maybe you didn't get it, like, it makes skins for the first time feel like rare and cooler in a way that they currently don't, because you can get whatever you want very easily. It makes that artificial scarcity so that you see like a Zarya skin and you see like, oh, I want that. How do I get that? I can't get that. And like, it makes, and that's, I think there's something cool about it, and like, this game certainly does not have that anymore. Like, in the very beginning of the game, the whales would have like kind of access to some of the skins that they wanted, but now that people are really like, yeah, like 100s and 200s and stuff like that, and maybe have even bought packs on the side, like, everyone has legendaries for everyone. Like, they don't care. Like, it's not a rare thing. You don't see a legendary skin anymore, and the way that you would in like League of Legends, and think like, like, damn, that's a cool skin, man. Like, awesome. Like, I really want that. The way that you do in Overwatch, where you just see everyone can have whatever, any skin they want, because they can either have gotten them by now or paid for them. So you never see, like, I never see a skin anymore and think, like, I want that one. I love the Barbarossa Torbjorn, you know? Like, I think that's I think that there's something cool about that. I think there's something cool about creating artificial scarcity in it.
About the Barbarossa Torbjorn.
About the Barbarossa Torbjorn. Like, do you guys agree with that at all? Like, it is like very anti current game development. Like, currently players want to get 100% and they want to like never be denied that. Like, they want there to,
you know, to be honest, I don't care about cosmetics in Overwatch very much, because I have cosmetic for the most part. I have cosmetics that I like for the characters that I like.
Yes,
and
yeah,
that's kind of enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at right now in Overwatch, is where everyone has the things that they want. And I wasn't even screaming about the new skins for the most part. Like, I kind of like the Genji one. I really like the McCree one. I have not gotten it, by the way, the American McCree. And
you still have to buy a couple more boxes, huh?
maybe if I'm like really running out of time, I would. But I've been playing a decent grip of Overwatch, so I'm just hoping to get it from a pack if I get lucky enough. But there is something cool about that, you know. There's something cool about like when this goes away, if like the skins are actually rare for the first time in Overwatch, they're not something that you can just get whenever you want, and that there will be people who get Overwatch afterwards, or people who didn't get the skins during the event and who look at it and are like, damn, American McCree, that's sick, I want that.
Sure. All right. And they also introduced a new game mode. This is something that's worth talking about, because historically, Overwatch has had these weekly brawls, and they've all been pretty lackluster, pretty not interesting. Mostly just like, there's a weekly brawl where it's like, this one only, you can only play as Pharah and Mercy, or for this week, you can only play as Genji and Hanzo. But this time, they created a totally unique brawl, and it's called Lucio Ball, and it's pretty much Rocket League in Overwatch.
Yeah.
So it's a three versus two. Yeah, it does. So it's a three versus three soccer mode where everyone plays as Lucio, and you have to try to knock the ball into the enemy goal.
Yeah.
Except you're not a car.
You're a skate man. The thing that I like the most about Lucio Ball, and I played it a little bit, and I think it's pretty fun actually. Like, I don't think it's so fun that if I'm logging into Overwatch, I want to play Lucio Ball more than I want to like play my boy McCree or like, well, screw around with Anna in like quick play or something. But I do like it, and the thing that I like the most about it is that like they have these assets, and that's this is what I want out of a brawl. Like, I don't want like the lame shit that you already talked about. Like, I don't want like, it's Hanamura and it's Genji and Hanzo, because like, that's like half interesting, but mostly it's like you're limiting, like you're taking Overwatch, which is a game that you can like pick any character you want at any point in time, unless you're playing competitive, and like go crazy with them and then play them, and you're like limiting characters and picks, and you're limiting options in like lame ways. Like, it's not that fun. Like, we could already do that whenever we wanted to, really. And I really like the idea of creating a new stage that functions a completely different way. It's not about killing people. It's about playing like Rocket League, basically. And that's awesome. Like that, like they have the assets for it. They could throw it into the rotation if they wanted to. And it's not Overwatch at all. It is completely different. And that's cool. I think that's a positive thing, you know?
I agree. It's the most fun Brawl so far.
Yeah.
And yeah, and the potential is the most important part, because it means that they're willing to put in the effort to make more interesting content in the future that is not strictly vanilla Overwatch.
Yeah, but limited. Like, that's what you described, is like, you described the Brawls, and they're just, well, it's vanilla Overwatch, but you play on only this map, and you play with only these characters, and you play with only these rule sets, and now go. And it's like, is that more fun? Is that like more, is limiting the way that Overwatch plays more fun?
All right, what else you guys got?
We
got a whole list of things. We didn't even bring up the No Man's Sky yet, which has been sort of this it's big news for a lot of news in this game that hasn't come out yet. And you would think that after we discussed it last week that we wouldn't have anything else to say.
Oh,
because what we said last week was that somebody found their way to the end of the game and sort of, you know, had his opinions on it. And you would figure that that would be that, because the game is releasing this week.
Yeah. First of all, I think the interesting thing is, like, it is damning. I understand why people who are excited about No Man's Sky were very upset about someone reaching the center of the universe and doing this thing that Hello Games said would take, like, hundreds of hours to complete. I do understand why that's a problem. But even then, the way the person played it was, like, he optimized it and then did, like, the least fun thing, which was mostly, like, exploit it and exploit that, like, this one resource sold for a really high level. And, like, that's not what No Man's Sky is. Like, the equivalent, like, it reminded me of, like, Abzu and how I played Abzu. And, like, if Abzu came out and people were like, wow, it's so lame because someone paid extra money and they beat the game in, like, 30 minutes and they did everything as fast as possible. And, like, every time they got into an area, they did the gameplay mechanic in that area really quickly and then left it. It's like, that's not what, I don't think that's what No Man's Sky was about. Like, No Man's Sky was about, exploration and going to every planet you could find and seeing the animals and the fauna and the, like, planet makeup of it and stuff like that. And not just, like, how can I, as quickly as possible, beat the game? And I think that's, like, that kind of goes against the game's, like, built-in, like, motto. The way the game wants you to play it is, like, very, like, smooth and enjoy the ride and enjoy the journey and not
go on. The reason why we're bringing it up today is because Hello Games, developer of No Man's Sky, has detailed their day one release patch. Now, before they released these notes, they were urging people, do not review the game as it is because it does not have the day one patch. And, you know, people generally ignoring them. People have been streaming the game and getting hit with cease and desists because they're not supposed to be streaming the game as per requests of Hello Games. So looking over the update for day one, it's pretty intense.
They've added new ways
to play the game, pretty much.
Are you looking at the actual, like, bullet points? Because it is a list.
It is a list, yeah. So they've introduced literally new paths through the game, new ways to get to the end game.
That are written, that are like written stories, as I understand.
Now there's three, yeah. So they've changed the universe algorithm so that the people who were playing the games before it released, they now no longer have any idea where anything's going to be. But in doing so, they also have created galaxies that have altered in shape drastically, new environments, and the galaxies themselves are 10 times larger.
By the way,
it's a flashy buzz number.
I really
means anything.
I really thought it was interesting because in the language of the patch notes, they use the word universe, James, and I know you were talking about it last week. You were saying how originally when No Man's Sky was getting pitched, it was like they used the word universe to say, like, and in like an infinite procedurally generated universe. And then when the person, when it, like, it came out that this guy was playing it, like, the language started to change, and on a lot of the promotional material, it said galaxy, and galaxies are, like, there are millions of galaxies within a universe. Like, it is, like, exponentially smaller when you say that the world went from, that the game went from a universe to a galaxy. And the language on the promo, on, like, the new promotional material and the new patch notes is universe again.
So in addition to this, they've got new types of planets, new types of creatures, new types of hazards, including various weather like blizzards and dust storms. They've changed the atmosphere, the way that space and nighttime works in space. Yeah, they've fixed a lot of the bugs. They've increased ship diversity, which is something that I was originally worried about.
Increased inventory, trading is deeper.
More complex trading systems and different survival mechanics that seem like they're trending towards some more interesting things that aren't just like you need food and you need water.
Yeah, there's going to be
of,
like
blocking yourself from hazards,
poisonous like storms. They're talking about like probably having to make like filters for to breathe. I just made that up. That doesn't necessarily. It's not necessarily.
Yeah,
a thing.
You're thinking Metro.
I'm thinking Metro. I thought it was interesting that they said that the creatures now have their have diets and stuff, and that you can feed creatures and yield different results. So like similar to being able to like feed, like you'll be able to like feed creatures stuff and then find things in their poop. You'd be able to make creatures your pet, have creatures protect you, alert you of rare root of rare. Loot that there would be like new interspecies interaction. I assume before that in No Man's Sky the creatures kind of just wandered around and there wasn't really like an ecology, and now it's closer to like Abzu where you are seeing like creatures that are designed like this is a carnivore and it eats these herbivores and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know there's a lot more to these patch notes, but they also said in practically the same breath, next week we're adding the ability to build bases and own giant space freighters.
It's incredible.
So that's pretty wild.
It is like it is hard to call it a day one patch and not just like a game. Like if this was if I mean I wonder how long they were working on it. I can't assume that like they must have been working on it for so long. Like it must have been after the game went gold and then all of this has been worked on and fleshed out, and that they like removed a lot of stuff from the final game thinking it wouldn't be ready and then finally got it ready. So it's like it's very interesting. Yeah. That someone paid the money and then played this like very simple and shallow game, and then like this is the patch.
And you know, I'm still apprehensive. I'm excited to play this game, and I know that I'm going to enjoy this game because I know that this is a game. You know, I've played a lot of other games like this game, and I'm excited for it and interested in it. But I feel like it's still not going to live up to a lot of other people's expectations. People who really don't know what they're getting into when they get involved in
probably
this sort
true.
Of genre. So I'm really happy and satisfied about this. I hope that everybody else maybe sees this as a window into getting into some of these more nuanced and complicated survival games.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I like everything I've heard. I really love the way of the game looks in motion, and like I can't wait to see how like the creature diversity and like the like wildlife generator works, and how each
sure.
the planets are different, the terrain is different, and it all sounds very exciting. I'm definitely like really anticipating this game. Sean, are you interested in this game at all?
I haven't looked into it much.
We just explained it.
Yeah, I know. what you talked about was pretty interesting, but I'm not sure. It doesn't really seem like my type of game.
I guess not.
Some of the stuff sounds like ambitious to the point where the way it's presented in the game is probably not going to be nearly as interested as the way you can talk about it.
Yeah, we'll see, of course.
Like,
you mean like sifting through poop?
Yeah, like going through poop and...
That sounds so exciting,
sharing
right?
a lunch with your pet and stuff.
Watching the sunset with your with your new pet that you just felt around in his poop for a rare item.
Sounds like a Peter Molyneux experience.
Yeah, it does. I do often feel like there's plenty of games that aren't for me, and like this, like survival games or the games like this, like procedurally generated games that are like these infinite hour games, like they typically aren't always for me, but this is just one that really like catches my eye, and I think like I understand where like you never are interested in this type of game, but I'm surprised like nothing you've seen hasn't kind of like piqued your interest.
I've seen very, very little. I haven't seen an image from it since E3.
Wow.
Last year.
Wow, that's you're really holding out.
A lot of trailers out, so you could check it out if it's something that you if you're looking to be interested in something, I'm sure that this has something for you.
It's a lonely experience, right? It's a single player.
Yes.
Not exactly.
People leave their trace, but you don't interact directly with them.
Apparently, you can see people sometimes.
Man, there's still, like, as No Man's Sky is launching, there's still things I don't really, like, know exactly about it.
I hope it's good, though.
Yeah, I mean, I never hope that anything is bad.
Well, that's true.
That's just, like, the thing that everyone always says, right, is that, well, nobody wishes for a bad game, but...
I think a lot of people wish for bad games so they don't have to buy them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I can sort of get behind that philosophy, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already in. No Man's Sky, I bought it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't do that yet.
I already own it. But so I'm all in on that.
Cool.
Yeah.
What else you got? Or is this the deal?
I guess we're definitely winding down. The International, the Dota International.
Sure, that's like the Olympics, but for video games?
Yeah. I guess you could say that. I mean... The Olympics are really varied, and Dota, as it turns out, the International, they are mostly just playing Dota, if that makes sense.
But it is pretty varied in terms of, Dota has what, like 109 characters? Is that
something
right?
Something like that. They added a new character.
You know, in the weeks leading up to the International, about 100 of the cast were played.
Yes.
professionally.
I've been watching the International. I always watch the International every year. Dota, it's incredible how Dota manages to do balance because, like, or Valve manages to balance Dota because they, for the most part, there have been bad times in Dota, but for the most part, they have managed this incredible thing where, like, every character, every hero, or I forget what they're called in Dota, every champion or whatever, is viable. And they're all being played at the highest level. It's like, it's very incredible to watch. Like picks and the draft like pick is so fascinating to watch because anything can come out. Like there hasn't been like a real like most years like a meta kind of settles where like these are the top core picks and these are the top like support picks, you know. But that hasn't happened yet. And there is such a wide variety of styles and characters and kits being like played right now. It's really interesting to watch because there's just so many different things and there's so much that's like doable in Dota. So many different character combos and stuff like that and so many different build paths. Like it's such a ridiculous, it's always just such a ridiculously deep game and it's so cool to see the way that it plays out at a high level, how much differently Dota games play out, you know, like It's just so wild, and the production value is great. And on this International, they've got like just the best commentators. they're doing these like cool things where they are having like ARG Pokemon style. The picks are like the champions or whatever. I can't remember exactly the wording that they call them. Are showing up like on the caster desk. So like think of like the casters are casting and they're talking like, wow, they're going the bounty hunter pick. And then like before them, like bounty hunter is like in the room, like right in front of them. It's like
hey guys, it's me, bounty hunter. I'm here to get inside your Pokeball.
Yeah. But bounty hunter would probably run away. Stealth and run away. It's like, I always recommend it cause it's like, even if you don't understand Dota, usually the casters are like pretty decent at explaining Dota mechanics, and they are very complicated in a lot of cases.
Sure, yeah.
But like, this is the best of the best playing this game, so even if you don't know Dota, like, it's worth watching. this year's prize pool is $8 million for first. $8 million for first. Not like an $8 million prize pool. Like $8 million for first alone. Like, it's so funny because like it League of Legends is still doing like $1 million prize pools, and it's different because Riot has their players salaried, so like they're spending a lot of money, like making all the players have their salary and keeping, you know, the LCS going and stuff like that. So, but it still is crazy because Valve does this fascinating thing every year where they do the battle pass, and then everyone who buys it and like puts money into it, all the proceeds go directly to making the pot for the international hire, and then they even pay the sum of the tax. So the amount that like the first place team that wins the $8 million, they get that like tax free basically because the tax is paid off. It really puts it to shame a little bit because I know the salary and all the other arguments that I just made, but it's still funny when you're like looking at League of Legends, which is the bigger, way bigger game. And that the Worlds is like, you know, win the $1 million, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what League would be like with a marketplace, and I'm happy to never know.
I mean, they don't need to do a marketplace. Like, just do it. Just do the same thing. Like, make a skin, make like Worlds Ashe, and when you buy her, all the amount of money that Worlds Ashe makes goes to.
Or you could make the whole quest sort of thing that they have with the compendium, where you're doing all of these different things.
And wow, you think Riot could do that?
Yeah, because you already have Fantasy League, so you could tie it into the way that Fantasy League of Legends works.
I mean, Dota's like has such a competent
a compendium.
Competent. They have such a competent client. And it works so well, and it's like the game is built into it. And
sure, Valve, maybe like, in 2 years.
Yeah, like maybe when they come when it comes out of beta, like they're still using like the shitty Air client. Like, there's no way that you could probably build in the complexity of the compendium into the Adobe Air client that Riot uses. Yeah.
You know what though, Ryan? I think that's the deal with games.
Is that it?
I think that's Sounds it.
Right. I am losing my voice more and more.
So this has been WTDG Podcast. You can find us on WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDG Podcast, and on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
The sickest podcast on the web.
Yeah, that is for true.
How I feel.
Thank you, Ryan Galloway and Crying, for the use of your music. We use Patriot as the intro and the outro. Off the intro, Patriot. You can find them at the Run Forever Bandcamp. I'm looking at the art for the new Crying album, Beyond the Gales, Beyond the Windy Gales, I believe.
Beyond
the Fleeting Gales. Intense name.
Yes, it is a really intense name.
Very intense.
Beyond the Fleeting Gales.
And Crying was doing some promotional photography and stuff, so it's out there soon, and we're very excited about it.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, James and Sean.
Thank you, Thanks. Sean.
Thanks, guys.
Say our names.
Thank you, Kirby and James.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, World of Warcraft, for being oh so very dead.
And thank you, Bungie and Destiny, for not being good enough. And I wonder if this Rise of Iron will be good enough. Maybe not.
I guess we'll see. Yeah. And that's it. So the podcast is now over.